Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to part two of this week's Clash of the Titles, the podcast that for the month of December puts two Christmas movies with loads in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious, because it's this year's Merry Clashmas Christmas Countdown! Ho ho ho! We spent Monday's episode in Gotham City with a bat, a cat and a penguin as Tim Burton bid farewell to a franchise in suitably Burton style. Which means today, one was good. Two was not, so with number three, there were things to prove, and Shane Black was the man tasked with writing this super-powered ship from 2013. It's Iron Man 3.
I'm Tony Stark. I build neat stuff. I got a great girl. And occasionally, save the world. So why can't I sleep?
You elected me on a single platform. I will defend this country at all costs. The Mandarin must be stopped.
Show which film in this week's super-powered Christmas Clash will be victorious. We'll have a winner at the end of the show, so let's get it on. Welcome to the Clash of the Titles Merry Clashmas Christmas Countdown!
The Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. What are you waiting for? It's Christmas. Take them to church.
I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crumpton.
I'm Christ.
Welcome then to part two of Batman Returns versus Iron Man 3. As you well know, at the end of this episode, we will have the verdict, where we will declare which of these two movies is definitively the better Christmas film. Before we get into this episode, it is time. Okay, I got the nod. It is time for a dip into the digital mailbag and a review from one of you to make us feel good about us, read by Chris Tilly, a.k.a. A Chris Thrilly.
Well, first, a thank you to our amazing producer, Nikki.
Thanks, Nikki.
Thanks, because Nikki. Currently, I only have access to the UK reviews on Apple. But Nikki has opened up a treasure trove of international reviews to me.
What?
Starting with one from Jerry2777, who writes, "Good times. Quite simply, a warm hug of a podcast. If there's ever a live show in Oslo..."
Yes!
Fuck yes.
"The tequilas are on me. 5 stars.
They're about 20 quid a shot. So they are absolutely on you, Jerry.
Are you sure about this?
777.
Have you seen how much Vicky can drink? You weren't at the last live show. Bloody hell.
Oh, that's nice.
That's great. What a lovely, lovely review. Thanks, Jerry2777. Right. Let's get into this. On Monday, we had a brilliant sequel. And today, we have a brilliant threequel. A brilliant threequel that bucks the trend of The Godfather Part 3, Spider-Man 3, Alien 3, The Matrix Revolutions, Back to the Future 3, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift, Batman Forever, Home Alone 3, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, Robocop 3, Rocky 3, Superman 3, X-Men The Last Stand, and Jaws 3 fucking D. So, Chris, take us on a journey.
It's from his fucking speech,
I know,
isn't it?
I can't believe
that. He told
just
us this
happens.
Last week.
Yeah.
What?
We know that's from your speech.
I'm recycling material.
Did you not get enough love the first time?
It got really.
Brought the house down.
Literally.
Didn't bring the room down in here, though, did it?
Because you heard it, because you're my sounding board. I tested it on you, so you knew it.
It's not a test, you've done it already.
Yeah, but I tested it on you prior to then doing it at the live show and then doing it again now.
Did you?
Anyway, that's because you're old. They were students and kids in the room and they still had a lot of love for life and joy and wanted to have a good time as opposed to you two fucking old people.
That's true.
It is.
And it's good. It's actually a joke because I haven't got any jokes in this one. I've just gone straight forward. Here it is. Right. Iron Man 3 is a Christmas story where the hero interacts with three figures who give him a glimpse at alternate lives. Harley is the ghost of Christmas past, a kid who lacks a father figure, so invents one in his shed. He doesn't invent one. He invents things in his shed. There you go. That's your joke. I fucked up. Maya is the ghost of Christmas present, showing Tony what happens when he uses, ignores and treats women badly, something he's currently doing with Pepper. And Killian is the ghost of Christmas future, giving Tony an idea of what would happen if his brilliance and ambition goes unchecked by a moral compass. This is all in the cause of stripping Stark back so that come the end of the movie, Tony understands his weaknesses and faults, overcomes them, and discovers that even without the suits, he's still Iron Man. So when did you first see Iron Man 3, Vicky?
I saw it on the telly around the time when it came out, and then I was watching, I was like, oh, I had a really fun time. And then I saw, that's the, when I realised that Drew Pearce had gone on to such dizzy heights, because I didn't know that he had done that, so I'm an idiot. And I was like, oh, I was like, I know him! I see whoever I was sat next to. I don't know him anymore, but I did know him. I was so thrilled for him. Mm. And when I was watching, I was like, what is this Croydon joke? What is this? Like, what is, what's he called? Trevor Slattery. I was like, oh, I don't get it. And then I saw that and I was like, it makes more sense now.
I've asked Drew directly about the Croydon stuff.
Yeah.
I have quotes. So how did you know him?
We had a beautiful week in Tuscany together. I'm not even joking. We went on holiday together. No. It wasn't like that.
Right, okay.
We went night swimming and drank fine wines. And we did all of those things, but not just the two of us, because I was 18 years old. I don't know how old he is or was, but we were at a wedding and I was a plus one and he was a guest of the groom and I was a guest of the bride's family, and it was a very little wedding and we rented a villa in Tuscany and we spent the week together, and then we worked together because he got me a job after that. And then I used to see him like when I was a bit more grown up and knocking around Soho, and then I didn't see him for years because he was in Los Angeles doing this.
Yeah, so doing all right.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Spoken to him recently?
I haven't, no. But he was very fun on holiday.
Great.
Really, really fun.
See, he writes with fun.
Yeah. He was the nicest person, yeah. The most fun, so welcoming, just like, never met him before. And I felt really out of place and really uncomfortable because I was 18 and that's what I was like.
Sounds like me.
What, the awkward bit or the other bit?
No, the
bit?
Inclusive, the welcoming, just sort
think,
of nice.
Do you think so?
Fun. Fun. I think that's a word that's used to describe me.
Asked me a lot of questions about myself, wanted to get to know me.
Shall we crack on?
Yeah.
Alex, when did you first see this?
I saw it at a press screening. Mm. Loved it. Yes. Really loved it. Although much like Batman Returns, the climax left me wanting. But yeah, this was a great movie. And as I said on Monday, my favourite Iron Man movie.
Yeah, I was at that press screening, doubtless. I reviewed this for IGN. I gave a very positive review and got about 1,000 abusive comments, replies from butthurt geeks who have an issue with this film.
Why?
And it's funny, I thought a lot of people had an issue with this film, but then when you get outside that comic book geek bubble, this film made over $1 billion, people like it. But there's a certain contingent that are unhappy with how the movie treated the Mandarin, a character that they love.
Oh, of course.
Which I'll get into. And also, I was able to put that to both Drew and Shane Black in different interviews.
Yeah.
And so they respond to that criticism. And I think there's some really interesting feedback they have for the geeks.
Excited. Nice. And that's coming up, right?
That's coming up.
See, I didn't, you see, that was like the Joan Rivers thing on Monday. He says it's coming up. I don't go, so what did they say? See, I wait.
I'm learning a lesson.
And I could be trained as well.
It's good to keep learning after all this time.
It is.
Interesting behind the scenes stuff on this story as well. Jon Favreau relinquished directing duties to make a film called Magic Kingdom that he didn't end up making.
Oh.
But he said it was fun to be acting this film rather than act and direct.
Well, he's still counting all his money. He's like, yeah. Don't worry about it.
He said it's like being a grandparent getting to play with the kids but not having to change their nappies. That was his experience on this movie. So Robert Downey Jr. called up his Kiss Kiss Bang Bang writer-director Shane Black. Downey said, bringing in Shane Black to write and direct Iron Man 3 to me is basically the only transition from Favreau to a next thing that Favreau and the audience and Marvel and I could ever actually sign off on. Shane Black said he wanted to make it less men in suits fighting. I mean, there is that still, but he wanted to make it more like a Tom Clancy story. And he brought on board Drew Pearce to write the screenplay with him. Drew, this is one of the things Drew Pearce said to me when I asked him about this process. He said, I don't think I realised at the time, because it was my first massive film to work on as a screenwriter, but Shane and I were the only two people that ever touched a keyboard in the entire 3 years in the making of Iron Man 3. That just doesn't happen to the degree that the Writers Guild didn't believe that other writers hadn't been brought in at some point. There was no precedent for it.
That's fascinating, because Drew Pearce had been working with Robert Downey Jr. prior to this on the Avengers movie. I remember he used to be there on set with Robert Downey Jr. to come up with the asides and ad-libs that Tony Stark delivers, like, in such a casual manner in that movie.
Right, yeah, yeah, he's good at that. So Mia Hansen is one of the villains in this film, played by Rebecca Hall. She was the overarching villain in the original script. According to Shane Black, the reveal of the actual villain being Hansen was like Remington Steele. Did anyone watch Remington Steele?
No.
It was where it's the reason Pierce Brosnan couldn't be Bond and Timothy Dalton got it.
Oh.
Initially, because he was signed to his contract and they wouldn't let him go from this shitty TV series,
right,
where he was seemingly the brains of this spy operation, but he was actually the woman in the background.
He was
just the beauty, really. And so that was going to be it here. You'd think it's the man who's the villain in this film, but it turns out she's been running the whole thing all the way through.
Great.
That didn't happen.
They just killed her.
Do you want to know why? Do you want to know why it didn't happen, Vicky?
It didn't test very well.
Ike Perlmutter is the reason. The guy that was making decisions at Disney at the time. Shane Black said, we'd finished the script and we were given a no-holds-barred memo saying that we cannot stand. This cannot stand. We've changed our minds. After consulting, we've decided that the toy won't sell as well if it's female.
Because Barbie doesn't shift any units.
And also she's pregnant. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's why I do the costume department. When she turns up, they put her in trainers to be like, she's no sexual threat to anybody.
So Shane Black said, we had to change the entire script because of toys.
Jesus Christ.
But also,
so when Drew Pearce says,
no one else touched this keyboard,
they kind of touched you.
He didn't need to.
Yeah. Literally went, but you with the keyboard, we're not touching that fucking shit. Why would we do that? We're really rich people who make toys. Make different things.
Yeah. Rebecca Hall said, I signed on to do something very different to what I ended up doing. Halfway through shooting, they basically said to me, what would you think if you just got shot out of nowhere?
It's not good.
It's really upsetting.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting.
It also makes no sense.
Because she says to him, what happens if you go hot? I don't know, bang.
She literally basically, the only reason she does that is because she feels she has enough weight
she's invulnerable.
To get away with it. And then he goes, bang. And you're like, but those questions she was asking, are you going to then answer those? Have you come up with something new that means you're just never going to answer that? Okay, fine, fuck you.
I was meant to be in the movie until the end. I grappled with them for a while and then I said, you have to give me a decent death scene. They didn't do that.
No.
And you have to give me one more scene with Iron Man, which I guess they did at some point. It's tragic, really, and horribly underserved, that character is. There were also issues with another villain in the movie, the Mandarin, as I've mentioned, but we will get to them when we get to him.
Lovely.
So let's do the movie.
Okay.
We start with voiceover, Vicky.
Oh, Drew. You're going to watch me jump through a few hoops. No, do you know what? Don't love it. Let's move on. It's unacceptable. I can't help myself. Voiceover, Bern, Switzerland. Title card, Bern. Is it even that important that we know we're in Switzerland? That I get told twice that I'm in Switzerland.
Someone later on goes, remember Switzerland?
Remember Switzerland?
Yeah, so we do need to know it's Switzerland.
Twice, do we need to know it twice?
Switzerland's a very forgettable place. Have you been? You need to be reminded it's Switzerland.
I don't get it because I don't know, again, but you say no one else touched the keyboard. It just feels like it's redolent of someone being like, people won't know what's going on. A voiceover even in a little bit goes, Tony Stark going, and that's when it happened. Cut, and then you show Tony Stark looking at the TV and it's like, just show the thing fucking happening. Like, don't worry about it.
Did you watch the post-credit scene?
Oh, what happens in it?
Because you find out what this voiceover is.
No, I didn't.
Okay, so this voiceover is Tony Stark lying on a couch speaking to a psychiatrist, telling his story, and then it pulls back to reveal it's actually Bruce Banner. And Bruce Banner's like, I'm not that kind of doctor. And it's a bit of a funny back and forth. Oh, and he's been asleep for most of it as well.
Oh, that's fun. Do you know, that's on me because, of course, there's a post-credit thing, but I just turned it off. That's bad.
Yeah. Sure, I just wondered if it would excuse the fact that there is a bit of voice over here saying a famous man once said, we create our own demons.
100% does. I think so. I think we can give it a pass on that. I don't like the line here where Tony Stark says to Aldrich Killian, I'm going to try and get my beak wet.
You prefer dick? Dick wet. I mean, it's that's what you'd normally say. Did you get your dick wet, Vic?
It's too close to that, but it's also somehow worse.
Fine. How do you feel about the movie starting with Blue Dubba D by Eiffel 65?
Really, really thrilled.
It's the first of many unexpected choices in this film.
So good.
And you know what this podcast does to us sometimes? I spent half an hour watching a documentary about the making of the song Blue Dubba D and what happened to Eiffel 65.
What happened to Eiffel 65?
They fell out. They didn't get on. The DJ didn't have that much involvement in making the song and he got the same amount of money.
Okay.
But they recorded it in like 2 hours.
Yeah, I bet they did.
I mean, why are you surprised?
Blue is the colour of the sun.
No, the lyrics are really good, though. Amazing. I had never listened to the lyrics. It's about depression.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was about actually painting yourself blue.
Well, as they say, blue can mean many things.
It's a brilliant song, and it's criminally underused.
A bit of fun, though. The first person he meets here is Dr. Ho Yinsen, a heart doctor who introduces him to a heart doctor as he's walking through the party.
Yeah.
That's the bloke he meets a few years later in the cave who saves his life.
Oh, that's excellent.
And in the cave, apparently, he says to him, oh, we met once before and Tony can't remember.
Yes!
It's a fucking party!
Yes!
Lovely
fun.
Stuff.
That's great.
And did you clock that Happy was dressed like Vincent Vega? Because we're not long after Pulp Fiction. He's got the little tie in the hair and the beard.
He does, yeah.
Lovely stuff.
I thought that was just his look.
So he wants to see Maya Hansen's research. As Alex says, Aldrich Killian. Killian Aldrich or Aldrich Killian? It could go either way.
Aldrich Killian, but do you like his name?
Killian.
Killian, because he's going to do a lot of Killian.
He's essentially Riddler from Batman Forever, though, isn't he? He shows up all geeky. He's a genius. The hero won't listen to him and he goes away and then has a glow up.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Killian, though, wants Tony to join his think tank, Advanced Ideas Mechanics, AIM. Tony invites him on the roof but never shows up because he goes to bed with Maya, who's using the regeneration techniques used in Amazing Spider-Man a year before.
I thought she was growing cannabis at first.
So did I.
Yeah. Mm. I was really surprised when the shot goes back and I was like, oh, it's not weed.
Yeah,
never mind.
It explodes. You don't want weed to explode.
In your brain you do.
Yeah.
Aldrich, he leaves him alone on the roof, and that is Tony creating his own demons without even realising it.
Great.
Present day Malibu, California. Tony's listening to Christmas music while pieces of suit fly and attach themselves to him. He's drilled outlets under the fucking skin.
Oh yeah.
Madness. Pepper's annoyed with him. Kevin Feige said the love triangle this movie is really between Tony, Pepper and the suits. Tony says, I'm the best, and then gets smashed into. What Shane Black does every 10 minutes of this film is do something cool and then undercut it or say something cool. And I actually find it very satisfying.
I found it satisfying. It gets right at the end when he says the prodigal son has returned and then the suit collapses. I was like, I've had enough of it.
One too many.
Now. Yeah,
one too
bit.
Many.
But I do love it.
It's great. Well, it's perfect for Tony Stark because I find Tony Stark too smug.
Yes.
And then here it really works.
Sure.
Yeah.
So he's been awake for 72 hours building his Iron Legion and he turns on the TV, as you said, sees the Mandarin ranting and raving.
You'll never see me coming. Love that. Love the reading of that line.
And it's a great line because it's got two meanings because we don't see him coming later in the film. We've got the twist to come. Rhodey's no longer War Machine. He's Iron Patriot in an underdeveloped subplot, whatever.
it's
one fine. For the comic book fans, isn't it? Well, no, it probably isn't because they'd probably want that plot to be developed. But anyway, that's happened. Killian now looks great.
Yeah, he does. He hasn't got socks on, though.
I hate it.
I know.
It's a choice, though, isn't it? I mean, it's a choice for him being some tech bro genius that he would dress like that.
But it also makes you go, oh, he looks cool. Oh, he's not cool.
Yeah. He pitches extremists. Is it extremists?
Extremists.
Extremists, sorry. Pepper turns him down for moral reasons. That's important because obviously Maya Hansen goes in the other direction. And then back at home, Tony admits that he's been a mess since New York. So we've got our hero suffering from post-traumatic stress.
He is also being a dick, though, because So she's like, you ate without me on date night. That's a bad move. But also he's outsourcing affection because he's got the suit upstairs, which she nearly gets off with, which is awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad boyfriend.
And buying that big bunny. Like, there's something wrong in his head.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But a grown woman doesn't want that.
I want that. Do you not want that? Imagine coming round to my house and I got a fucking massive bunny in the living room. You'd be like, that's kind of fucking awesome. What are you talking about? That's something, someone's wrong in their head. If you got me that, I would love you forever.
I can see that you'd like it.
But it's intentional that it's weird because he's gone off the rails. Like, there's something up with him. The choices he's making, the things he's doing and the things he's saying are all slightly off.
Yeah.
Cut to Man Chinese Theatre and we meet Savin, played by James Badge Dale, who is a Terminator? The extremis.
It doesn't help that he does look a little bit like Robert Patrick as well. So you're just like, is that the T-1000? Is this a weird crossover?
He also looks a bit like Sam Worthington with the shaved head.
Yeah. He's a bit better than Sam Worthington.
So, yeah, the extremis has sort of turned soldiers into super soldiers. There's an explosion that nearly kills Happy. And that enrages our man, Tony, who tells the Mandarin he's not afraid. He's coming for him for revenge. It's unusual for a superhero to basically say, I'm going to kill you.
Yes.
I like that. And Tony is not afraid of killing people in this film. He actually seems to quite enjoy it.
I don't know why he trashes the guy's phone at the end.
It undermines the point.
Yeah.
Because he's like, is that what you wanted? Yeah. I've thrown your phone away.
It's like, wait, were you doing that? Yeah. Were you doing that? Were you fake? Was that fake or was that real?
Are you golding the Mandarin?
End to the scene.
I agree.
You know, you really are a hypocrite, aren't you?
I think the guy wasn't a very good actor, though, so maybe that was Robert Downey Jr. just in the moment.
Oh, really?
Fuck you. Yeah. And he tells the press, and therefore Mandarin, his home, including he gives his postcode.
He does. You need
very
it.
Very specific.
What, a GPS?
But, I mean, he's the Mandarin. I don't think he needs that. He doesn't need the zip code.
You'll never see me coming.
And you'll never see me coming.
So rockets blow the place up.
Tell me that isn't the coolest fucking scene in the world.
It's incredible.
I've forgotten her name. Rebecca Hall points at the screen and goes, should we be worried about that?
Yeah.
And you see the news footage of a missile heading for the mansion, and then the missile actually hits in real life. It's fucking... I've never seen it before. It's a great start to that action scene.
Talking about Marvel, Drew Pearce said they wanted it to be about the sort of the destruction of Tony Stark, and the one scene I remember being given on day one was his entire house and his entire laboratory sort of decimated and taken out from under him. So that's the one scene they had to write.
Right.
I guess someone else did touch the keyboard.
And they also always make them write the big action sequences first, so they can then, because you have to film those first, you have to do all the visual effects, and then they have to, basically, that's a thing. You do the action sequences first, say what's happening in the action sequences, and then stitch them together with some plot.
But with this one, I feel like the plot is pretty central. I think this one has really led it. The house party directive, though, that comes up later, why can't he use the house party directive here?
Good point. I think the lab's already destroyed by the time, or it's not functioning yet. There seems to be something at the end where Jarvis eventually goes, yeah, it's finally operational.
Yeah, because it's been destroyed.
Right.
All right. So Pepper's protected by Tony's suit and she escapes with Maya. Tony summons the suit and takes down a chopper with a piano. I like that.
Yeah.
In the process, his house falls into water, as does he, before the suit flies him away. And that's the perfect break for Act 1 into Act 2, with Tony crash landing in Tennessee. And so we'll take a break there and we'll get on with Act 2.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you.
Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So a lovely bit of imagery here, Tony dragging his suit through the snow to a big shed where he meets Harley, played by Ty Simpkins.
How good is this kid?
Fucking amazing!
Good. How good is this one?
It's unbelievable.
Because I remember being in the cinema thinking, oh no, cute kid alert, this could be
also
awful.
Also worse, like streetwise kid with parent issues, just like, oh, not this again.
Yeah.
He's so good.
He's glorious.
He's so good, and Tony Stark doesn't pull any punches with him, which is great, because there's no sentimentality. I mean, there is a little bit, I guess, but the fact that he goes, you know, that happens, dads leave, there's no need to be a pussy about it.
Yep.
Great.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
rough, rough, harsh but fair. Harley can't believe his eyes when he sees the suit. He tells Tony that he's technically dead, and Tony learns about a soldier called Chad who's been a victim of Extremis. So he goes to a honky-tonk bar where a Terminator lady appears and kills everyone. Much like the Maya Hansen character, this character was apparently in a version of the script quite important.
Oh my god,
had a role.
Like, another woman? No.
What the fuck did we tell you about toys? Yo, do you want us to make any fucking money? Get back to that thing you call a keyboard and change this.
But in quotes, keyboard, whatever that is.
Shane, what is it, Drew? I think the line is that no one else touched the keyboard. I think we'll still come out smelling of roses, like we were in control. It's not because they haven't touched it, so that is legit true.
But we have to take out all the women. Yeah. Is that okay?
And they do. The keyword touching a lot is delete.
Tony does blow her up.
Yeah, he does.
And leaves town, just like Harley's dad.
Yeah, it's a bit arbitrary the way they sort of, they survive some things but not others. I thought she was going to come back, but she's, it's kind of a shit death for now that you've told us that she was just written out, where she's just on some telephone wires. She looks complete. She hasn't lost any limbs or anything. You're like, she's coming back.
No, yeah. No, she's done. Meanwhile, there's a hostage situation happening. The Mandarin has someone prisoner and demands the president calls, which he does. And then the Mandarin kills the hostage anyway.
Yes.
Not sure what the lesson was. The fact it's like, you can't. Is the lesson to the president?
I'll do what I want.
You'll never see me coming.
Yeah. But it's kind of undermines what Trevor says later, that he doesn't know what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
If he shot this person. He says it's all special effects and movie magic, but we don't see it, but they see him shoot the guy on screen. Yeah. So
I guess, yeah. Yeah, actually, sorry, I was going to say, maybe you thought it was blanks, but that wouldn't explain how other people see it. Although maybe it just cuts away and you just see him fire the gun. Maybe it's a clock. Anyway, fuck it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I don't see why Killian would go so far out of his way to not kill that guy. He's not got a problem with killing people. Yeah. I think Trevor's just maybe a bit worse than we come to expect.
You don't know. Killian might be a massive fan of Trevor's work. I want him to act again after this. And if he kills someone, that won't happen.
We go to Chattanooga and see Stan Lee giving scores at the Chattanooga Christmas pageant.
Whatever.
I don't know about that. We learn that Maya is working with Killian, who is working with the Mandarin, and they've got Pepper. Tony realises the Mandarin is in Miami, and we get a shopping montage.
Oh yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
The make the stuff montage.
Yeah.
Yes, love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like MacGyver style.
And because it is a Christmas film, and when he lobs the bauble full of something, I do like that.
Nice floating bauble.
Yeah.
Nice touch. So this whole bit here where Maya has done the dirty on Pepper and has said to Killian, we've got her now, we've got her. So Tony'll have to do what we want. He'll have to fix the formula. This is the start of this plot about Tony fixing the formula, which makes no sense for the rest of the movie, because it's like, at no point do you think Tony is ever going to fix this formula
never
for
even
them.
Tries, does he?
And it's like, so she needs him, and that's why, again, when she gets shot, Maya gets shot, you're kind of like, Right, so Tony has to do it now. It's, I think it's almost like Killian has Pepper now, and Amaya's dead, so Tony has to fix it, otherwise Pepper definitely dies, because no one else can. It's just, it's very bewildering and overcomplicated. Do you know what's going on here?
They kidnap Pepper so that Tony has to do what they tell him to do.
Which he never does.
They've got it wrong, but that's what their plan is.
Right.
And he does fix it at the end. He says he's going to, because she's like, oh, what's going to happen? I'm all melting.
Yeah, but not for them. He's just going to fix her.
Yes.
But it's like, I don't see any point where Killian's plan is even slightly working throughout the whole movie, which is a problem when you're like, you want the villain to actually have a shot at their plan working, and it never seems to be working once.
So Tony sneaks into the villa with a makeshift weapons, including that exploding bauble, and locates the Mandarin. He hears him via a toilet flush. We hear his English accent, and it's this great switcheroo because it ain't the Mandarin, or the Mandarin is Trevor Slattery, which is too close to Tony Slattery. And if I say Tony Slattery, apologies.
Tony Slattery.
I know.
Whose line is it anyway?
I saw him in a pub in Greenwich once when I'd first moved to London. It's the most starstruck I could ever imagine being.
Yeah?
I was so blown away.
Because it was the 80s. I know. And you see stars like that.
R.I.P.
You
know. I couldn't believe it.
Shane Black said that Ben Kingsley's Mandarin is not Chinese in the film, as he is in the comics, to avoid Fu Manchu stereotypes.
Yeah.
That is the main reason that this was done. He also thought it'd be a fun way to take on America's xenophobia towards the Middle East, and he said, what was of use about the Mandarin's portrayal in this movie to me is that it offers up a way that you can sort of show how people are complicit in being frightened. They buy into things in the way that the audience for this movie buys into it. I think that's a message that's more interesting for the modern world, because I think there's a lot of fear that's generated towards very available and obvious targets, which could perhaps be directed more intelligently at what's behind them.
Good point.
Yes.
I think it's a really good point.
Yeah.
What do you think of this twist? Do you have any problem with it?
Oh, it's, I don't know. The first time I saw it, you're like, ha, 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 brilliant. And then it's like, ha, 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 good. But then maybe I felt a bit like, I wish Trevor just was, he's a very, what am I trying to say?
Broad. It's
he's
very broad humour.
And he's a puppet and he's whatever, whatever. But wouldn't just another twist where he's like, I actually am this sort of... There's a little bit more to him rather than him being this sort of straw man for the... I don't know. Because it's a very big joke, isn't it?
I'm kind of with you. I just thought that I didn't enjoy it as much this time because I knew it was coming. But I remember the first time I saw it in the cinema, people lost their shit.
Yes.
It was like, the fuck?
I tell you, my genuine reaction when I first saw it is I can't believe they got away with it. I can't believe that someone went to the Americans and went, he's going to basically be this drug addicted stage actor from like Southeast England, and we're going to make quite a lot of in jokes about English people, British people, whatever, and that's going to be okay. Yeah. And the Americans went, yeah, fine.
And they managed to keep it secret.
Yeah.
No one had a clue going into that movie.
Yeah.
And that's why it was so good, because you watched the trailer and he was so menacing as the Mandarin in the trailer, and you're like, fucking hell, Ben Kingsley, this villain.
Yeah.
And you brought all this with you, and then ching.
Yes.
So I asked both Drew and Shane years later how they felt about the fact that there was a backlash, but I think it was from a minority, but nevertheless, it was a very angry minority.
Yeah.
Drew Pearce said, it fucked everyone off. We are unrepentant. It's one of the things I'm most proud of, that twist. I managed to Trojan horse an idea from Adam Curtis's The Power of Nightmares into a $1.3 billion movie. And I think the idea of governments or corporations building up false faces and demonising otherness to distract from their own nefarious deeds has only proven to be more and more correct over the last 5 years since the movie came out. I also still can't believe we managed to get a surprise into a summer movie. I am utterly unrepentant, and good. I know Shane is too.
And tell Vicky that Tuscany was amazing.
Shane said to me, we may have done our job a bit too well. It meant some of the fans felt fooled. They felt, I think, that they'd been led down one path and then sold a bill of goods. It's hard because I want to please the fans, but in this case, I thought, and we all thought, that it was just a very interesting and very layered decision. And it came out of the idea they were thinking about AIM, this think tank from the comics. And he said, what if they cobbled together a sort of boogeyman? What would that look like? They'd researched, they actually had data spit out about the various things that people would find frightening, and they would concoct from this the straw man terrorist, the paper tiger, and then push that on the internet. It felt modern, it felt interesting, it felt textured. But yeah, a lot of people did not
agree. There is an element of tricking the audience that maybe you might not be in the mood for, because when you think the Mandarin is or the person Ben Kingsley is playing is a sort of generic terrorist. Mm. He's just saying things that you as a Western audience, you go, well, that's a terrorist right there, because he's, you can see the burning villages and you can hear this like faintly sort of religious overtone to his diatribes and things like that. You don't look at it too closely. You just use your racism and xenophobia to go, yep, terrorist. Mm. And then it gets thrown right back at you. That's like, fuck you for thinking that. And you think, oh, okay, fine. But I like that.
I quite enjoyed all the wasted mansion girls who, you know, in any other movie, Shane Black would have gone, and they've got their boobs out. Then Marvel.
It's so complicated. Marvel, it's like, I love him, but it's like, you are right.
Yeah, Marvel went, yeah, about that, Shane. Yeah. You can compromise.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could
we have... want you to delete the... you've got a strong female... No. Get rid of that, but also no tits. So we've kind of balanced out.
So Trevor has substance problems. They've offered him a palace, plastic surgery, women, a speedboat, and more drugs.
Yeah, that's great, that line.
I do like the fact he's unrepentant about the drugs. Yeah. Like, that's good.
Tony Stark goes, oh, they said they'd get you off them. He goes, no, they said they'd give me more. Such a good line.
Have you seen the Hail to the King short that they did, that Drew directed?
No.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's a follow-up to this where Trevor's in prison and someone comes to visit him to interview him, and it's even funnier than this, I would say. But it does then connect to the real Mandarin, which they do introduce in a later film, Shang-Chi. But then they figured out a way to make it work, and guess what? It can work if you've got Chinese heroes and a Chinese story, right?
Yeah, right.
Rather some American dude.
Yeah, of course.
So Tony ends up saving, shows up, gets Tony, and he's chained up at Killian's on Killian's wall. So Killian enters and thanks Tony for gifting him with desperation. It helped him come up with anonymity, so he could rule behind from behind, and so he's no target. He also says of Trevor, they say his Leah was the toast of Croydon, wherever that is.
Really funny.
Big laughs in Leicester Square.
Yeah.
Mainly from me. What? Fucking Croydon! So I told Drew that I was from Croydon, and I asked him about that line, and he said, I used to live in East Grinstead, so Croydon was the Greek river I had to travel to get to the glory of London. If the gateway to London was Victoria, then Croydon was where I had to pass through. I've had some great nights out in Croydon, and now I feel like I owe it my career. One of my proudest moments was being there for those first couple of nights in London to do press, and simultaneously thinking I couldn't believe that I got that line through. It's so great that it got a laugh, and that laugh is never going to play anywhere other than those theatres. Good stuff. So Killian's filling Pepper with extremis. Maya threatens to kill herself unless he lets Tony go, so Aldrich shoots her dead.
Very bad.
It was bad. When I've watched it, it's even worse knowing the backstory.
Yeah, it's upsetting,
just
isn't it?
Yep. Awful.
Really grim. Just so you know, they got rid of that guy pretty soon after.
Right.
Because he was the guy that was overruling Kevin Feige on a lot of decisions. Because Feige does genuinely seem to be doing the right thing, or trying to.
This is a guy from a toy company.
No, he's at Disney, Perlmutter. Right. He was making a lot of decisions. Him and Feige were famously bashing heads for the duration of these early MCU movies, and I don't think he lasts long after this, then.
Although perhaps that conflict gave us some of the best MCU movies. Hmm?
Where maybe so, just no women in them.
Mother, where we are, there aren't any women.
Well, they're in it, they just get shot quite early on. Or they're wasted in a mansion. I mean, that's great.
Killian claims he's not a maniac, but rather a visionary. He's all a bit Elon Musk here. And then he breathes fire.
That's funny. I like the fact that even his own team go, the fuck is that?
So his plan is to own the War of Terror and create supply and demand. Stark tells the goons that who he's going to kill first. Mm. I mean, how many films have we seen that in? But it's, again, unusual to see a superhero say that. His suit arrives in pieces and he takes those goons down. Savin has the Iron Patriot suit now. Tony and Rhodes are speedboating to save the president and the vice president. So, the vice president, he has a daughter with a missing leg. Which is how we find out he's working for the villains.
Yes.
Nice economical storytelling. Did you recognise that daughter sitting in the wheelchair?
No.
She's famous now. I was like, is that? And I checked it. That is Wednesday Adams, a.k.a. General Tager.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, she looks very different.
She's made her MCU debut. She looks exactly the same, if I'm honest.
Wow.
Same face.
Formerly of the Scream franchise.
Yeah. Formerly of the Scream franchise.
Mm. Yeah.
Not showing solidarity to her co-star who was fired the day before. Completely by chance, she decided to announce the day after her co-star was fired for the tweets.
Yeah.
She decided then was the right time to go. By the way, scheduling conflicts.
She was never available. Yeah, yeah, I was never going
to
do it.
Yeah, it just happened to be today.
So people are falling out of Air Force One, and our hero can save the president or Pepper. Can't do both. Very The Dark Knight.
Mm.
We've got 13 passengers falling through the sky, and Iron Man can only carry four of them.
Mm.
Lovely stuff. So this amazing sequence, they were going to shoot it on green screen, then realised the Red Bull skydiving team could do this all physically.
Awesome.
And that's what they did. The guy who did the Moonraker plane stunts oversaw the costumes with hidden parachutes here. I watched the behind the scenes. They had to do 600 parachute jumps to shoot this.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
How long does that take? Like 4 years? I don't understand. That's insane.
So what happens is Iron Man...
Can you parachute out of one plane and then land in another and then do it again from another?
If you're a badass, yes, you can.
I guess the dude from Moonraker probably can. So Iron Man grabs one person, electrifies their arm, and then connects them.
I didn't really get that.
He's barrel of monkeying them, Vicky.
Yeah, I love
that. That's all you need.
Yeah, that's true.
It's barrel of monkeys.
And I was like, great, makes sense.
And they safely drop in the water. This scene was epic on the big screen.
Mm.
I absolutely loved it. He's the hero, and then he gets hit by a truck.
Perfect.
Undercutting again. But he wasn't in the suit. He's controlling it from the boat. So, and they set that up nicely earlier in the film. You thought that was an emotional beat, and actually it was also an action beat for later.
Great.
So there's a whole... The hole opens in what's left of Tony's house and something flies out. That is the house party.
No, that's later. That's when
he's... What's this one called then?
I don't know. I don't remember. Was it the Mark 42?
No, this is all the suits coming.
Oh, we're at the docks now.
Yeah, we're in the end game now.
Oh, right.
Okay. They're on their way.
Nice.
So we're in the end game now. Killian has the president. He's talking about an eco disaster. He needs a reason to kill him that will play well on TV.
I think that feels a bit last minute. Like, I was like, oh, but so now do I want the president to die? Because this is new information that you were sort of responsible for an oil spill. So do I hate you?
Yep. I mean, we all hate people who are responsible for oil spills.
Yeah.
I don't know that you wish them dead.
You might do.
Okay.
If you just fight in the, we're watching, you know, a big, you big said, broad
do,
movie.
Do I want him to die?
Am I supposed to think he's a baddie or a goodie?
Like, who?
The president.
Well, with all that it's trying to make happen is for the president to be killed publicly by the Mandarin so the Veep can take his place.
Yeah. So why do you...
It doesn't matter what the people think.
No, it does.
Why does
it talk
about the oil spill?
No, it does. It needs to be that the president is killed for some other reason than whatever Killian's killing him for. So he needs to. He needs it to look like an eco group are murdering him.
Yeah, which they've been setting up from the start of the film.
Okay.
So this is death by oil. Is the
right.
idea.
Yes.
So all the armors, the house party flies towards them. It's created 41 suits. I did a bit of research, but I don't really care about this stuff. Igor, Heartbreaker and Hammerhead are three of them. Does that mean anything to you, Alex?
It does not, Chris.
No.
And there's 30-odd more to go.
I won't list them all.
I did a list at the start. Spontaneously.
Spontaneously? That's the third time.
But it's a fun scene with the suits flying, the barrels exploding, and the supercharged human beings dying.
Yes.
Tony finds Pepper, then Killian starts poking his heart, and they do battle. Tony tries to jump in his suits, but fails every time. Rhodey swings the president to safety.
That looks weird. Normally I tune out a little bit of stuff like this because it's a bit sensory overload.
It is.
But I thought it looked brilliant.
Yeah, it's very well choreographed, isn't it? Even when you don't 100% know what's happening, it looks cool.
It does.
Yeah. Tony sees Pepper falling into the fire. Tony and Killian have a punch up on the platform. Here we are on the roof. It's good. It connects to the start. The Mac 3's 42 is inbound. The prodigal son returning, smashes on arrival. Mm-hmm. Undercutting. Vicky's had enough of it at this point.
Enough. That's
think
too much
I do
for me.
Too.
Yeah.
Tony attaches the Mark 42 to Killian and has Jarvis blow it up.
Mm.
I like that.
Don't kill him though.
Doesn't
no, because he's a Terminator.
Quite a good moment where Tony does say to Pepper, you know, let go, I'll catch you.
Yeah.
And then fails to do it.
Yeah.
Because, granted, she survives, she's full of extremis. But that's going to have trust issues going forward for that relationship. Because, like, whenever he goes, look, I can do this. You're like, remember that time
when you said you can?
And I basically fell to my death.
It's a basic trust exercise. No.
It is, but this is the trouble with Pepper, because in a minute she's going to like finish the job, and then she's like, oh God, gross, kind of thing. Rather than, you fucking said you would catch me, and you didn't.
Which it needs to be. I mean, it's a funny line as well.
Yeah, what happened?
Next time you see Drew, mention that.
And it enables Killian to say, I would have caught her, which obviously makes Tony even more mad. Killian says, I am the Mandarin. Superpowered Pepper takes him out, and Tony can fix her because that's what he does.
Yeah.
So he's got some tats of dragons done. That's why he's the Mandarin? Is that the connection?
Oh, yeah. He was like, I am the Mandarin. We're like, yeah, we know. I don't get it.
But I just don't understand the tattoos. No. I mean, anyway. Fuck it.
Jarvis enacts the clean slate protocol and all the suits explode like fireworks.
Yeah, yeah. New Year's Eve. Christmas fireworks.
So now Tony has no more distractions. So the Vice President and Mandarin arrested. Pepper's sorted out. Tony's shrapnel's removed.
I'm going to get lynched. How does he live without the thing in his heart? How does he have that shrapnel taken out? Sorry, what happens to him?
Sorry, what?
Isn't the shrapnel, the electrified shrapnel, what's keeping him alive?
I feel like we're winding down.
Yeah. How does the man live?
Really near the end of the show.
Okay. I know I've missed a huge thing.
He's Iron Man.
Yeah. Okay. Remember, he says it
at the end, I'm Iron Man.
He says it, he's really seriously.
And then he looks at the fucking camera.
Can't help himself.
Robert. Do a take where you don't look at the camera, because it's kind of fucking... I'm probably going to look at the camera again. Really? Because it's kind of me. I Robert Downey Jr., am Tony Stark, am Iron Man, so people need to know.
Happy's awake and enjoying Downton Abbey. Harley's got a shed full of toys and equipment, including a new potato gun. And then we are told, rather than shown, the theme of the movie. Because by voiceover, Tony Stark says, armour was never a distraction or hobby. It was a cocoon. And now I'm a changed man. I am Iron Man.
Voiceovers are so handy.
Did our hero change over the course of the movie? Yes, because at the end he says, I am a changed man. Script writing 101.
How do we know? We could just say it. Okay, let's just say it.
You ain't going to get invited to Tuscany again. Huh? Jesus.
I love the end credits here because they're like a 1960s TV show.
Yeah. So good.
And the theme tune is like a 60s version of the Iron Man theme tune. Yeah. And then the audio comes in at the end of the credits and we learn the voiceover was Tony talking to Bruce, who's been asleep the whole time. Mm. And says, I'm not that kind of doctor. I don't have that temperament. And that's the end of the film. I watched a bunch of deleted scenes. They're mainly about Harley's bully, EJ. He's actually got quite a major role in the middle section, but I can see why it was cut out. Yeah. Cost 200...
I'm going to be in the new Iron Man.
Oh, now I'm sad. I'm going to be on the deleted scenes on the DVD of the new Iron Man movie. Cost $200 million, made $1.2
billion. That's insane.
Back when Marvel movies were successful.
When they were good.
Yeah. We'll call it what it is.
And that's your lot. So, favourite scene, Alex?
Special mention to the Ben Kingsley, Trevor Slattery reveal, but my best scene is what I mentioned earlier when Rebecca Hall points to the TV in the mansion screen and says, should we be worried about that as a missile? He's heading towards it and then bang, it hits and bang, we're into the greatest action sequence in the movie.
Vicky?
Full disclosure, I'd had a couple of sidecars by this point of the film. But sorry.
Remind us what's in a sidecar.
It's cognac, Courvoisier and lemon and a sugar rim. And it is a lovely winter drink. It's ever so nice.
What have you got written down? What have you got written down, genius?
I've got monkeys in the sky. I found it joyous. I was really moved by the barrel of monkeys in the sky when he's like, come on, guys. I was like, guys, you can do this. But that is a ton of brandy for you. So there you go.
Okay.
Barrel of monkeys.
I'd just chuck my guts up when I watch this. Because I had food poisoning.
Name and shame, what was it? Do you want to name the outlet or do you just want to name the meal?
It was spaghetti bolognese from a local supermarket.
Major supermarket.
A major supermarket.
Really fucked him up.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
So I was not drunk, but mine too is the Barrel of Monkey sequence. It was in the cinema, and then watching it now and seeing behind the scenes, knowing that it was real stunt people doing all of it pretty
Amazing.
Much. It's like, oh, that's great.
And one of them was in a functioning Iron Man suit.
Right.
Mm. If you watch it, it's on the extras.
Okay.
Most valuable whatever, Vicky.
Shout out to Ty Simpkins as Harley because he's so bloody good.
And
so,
you know, he really, obviously made his return in Avengers.
What is he in Avengers?
Endgame. He's at the funeral.
Oh, is that the kid at the funeral? Yeah. I was like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, is that him?
Yeah.
I think he signed a 3-picture deal here. I think the idea was that he might turn into something. And so I think that was the second of his 3 pictures.
Oh, he's got one more to come.
Yeah. Oh, I think he might do. He's been in a bunch of movies. They might give him something.
He's in Jurassic World.
Yes. And they've got to figure out what to do next with Iron Man if Downey Jr. doesn't come back. So there's no reason why he couldn't be the next Iron Man.
I love that.
Downey Jr.'s coming back. All the Avengers are coming back because that has to happen. Otherwise, the House of Marvel collapses.
So it always kills me to do this, and I don't know why. I don't know why I'm so mean-spirited about it. But it is obviously Robert Downey Jr., like it tends to be if you were going to do an Iron Man film. So I think, I was like, why does he bother me? I think he bothers a lot of people. But like, why does this particular thing bother me? But also, why is it so addictive? Mm. And it's because I love his one-liners that Drew Pearce wrote for him. And I think it's very, very dry. But there is campy and histrionic stuff in this film because it is a comic book adaptation. And you have to do that with full commitment. And he just does. So, you know, look, being like, I am Iron Man is a fucking ridiculous thing to say. But when he does it, you're like, yes, you are. And that's me being like, this is all very silly. So it is him. It's just a very committed thing.
And he did it off screen as well. I remember hosting, maybe it was the premiere for this. It was certainly a premiere for an Iron Man movie. And he was the one of all the cast from the Avengers films who just got it. It's like there are kids at a premiere screaming because they're seeing Tony Stark.
Yes.
They're not seeing Robert Downey Jr., the actor. They're seeing Tony Stark. He'd come up out of the stage and like he would play the role. He was basically Tony Stark. Whereas the others, and look, you know, it's not everyone's game, but, you know, Chris Evans was never like, hey, I'm Captain America, kids. Yeah. He was like, I'm an actor.
I think it's
Captain
just a
America.
Nice thing to do it's for great. People, isn't it? Especially younger fans that like it. Like, they will just, you're bringing it to life for them. That will blow their minds. Yeah. It's lovely.
It's like when we do a live podcast.
Mm. Yeah, we're like, we're here, guys, and we're real.
I'm
Vicky. I'm a version of Vicky today.
I'm a version. What?
You bring different selves, don't you, to different things.
Did you give me a fucking tequila?
Oslo, did you give me a tequila?
Jerry! Jerry!
Alex, MVW.
Well, a bit like Vicky, a special mention to the wonderful Sky Timkins. Sky Timkins, looking forward to his third entry into the MCU. No, my winner, Ben Kingsley. I think he's just wonderful as Trevor Slattery. Upends the film in the most delightful way.
Yeah. I am not a massive Ben Kingsley fan.
No, you're not.
Sometimes I think he's great. Sometimes I think he's way over the top.
Yeah.
Here, I loved him. Yeah. It was such a wonderful surprise. I was kind of dreading his Mandarin. And then when I saw what was going on, yes, please, more of that. And yeah, I really recommend Hail to the King. It's on Disney Plus and it's only 10 minutes long, but it is hilarious. And what would you change, Alex?
I don't like climaxes at docks. I didn't like it in the A-Team. I don't like it here. I've never spent a lot of time at docks. I find climaxes in places that are recognisable to me emotionally. A city, a building, somewhere that I've been. It's great. Docks are just really boring and just seem to be picked because they have a lot of equipment in them that looks good for an action sequence but has no emotional resonance to the viewer.
They've got posts that you can fly around.
Exactly. It's just, what is a dock to me? I don't give a fuck about a dock. And they're also just like docks. It's like they're boring places. No one goes, should we go see the docks? I mean, people do, but they're boring people.
So Catherine's dock is beautiful.
But functioning...
There's a whole museum about the Docklands.
Functioning
the Docklands.
Storage docks, like modern docks, like this dock.
Stop saying dock.
They're not good. So I don't like the docks. I don't like the fact.
So where are you going to set it then?
A tropical house.
A greenhouse.
Yeah. No, greenhouse. But like a butterfly house.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's my change.
It's really good. So I always, you know, when we did Avengers, I have a bit of a problem with Pepper. I find her jarring. And this is one option to correct this jarringness. And what I find jarring about her is her...
She's in it too much. Get a shot about halfway.
That's a good point. So it's more about the character being completely always very forgiving. And I find that annoying. So this is the film where Iron Man is like undone by his personality and he starts to... The threads, it's all coming apart at the seams and Pepper's not going well. So Maya comes into the house and is all like, I'm not here to shag you because I'm wearing trainers. And he's like, well, you can't shag me because I've got a girlfriend now. And then a suitcase drops down from the top floor down at his feet.
And you think it's going
to
be...
And you think she's going to go, I'm leaving you. Yeah. And you're like, oh, brilliant. Here we go. And she's like, we're going away because I'm so forgiving all the fucking time that even though you're being a dick to me right now, I've booked us a holiday. Mental. So she should just leave him so that when she gets kidnapped, like a, you know, a woman in peril, she's left him. So he's got a lot of work to do to get her back. And then he drops her.
It's good.
Thank you. Mm. Mm.
I think also, do you want to mention the docs?
Have you seen season 2 of The Wire?
No,
that's
I've never seen it.
In and around the docs, and it's really good.
It?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I know, it's famously the best season of The Wire, but I think it's the worst. But it's still good.
It's the
worst. Right. Okay. Like, oh, I don't know what's going on.
Because of the
docs. Are quite boring.
I was reading one of those articles that Chris has on his website that do very well going, great actors who give shit performances,
yeah.
And one of them referenced The Wire, which I did. It was talking about Idris Elba as McCavity in the Cats musical,
yeah.
They were going, Stringer Bell never seemed so far away.
Oh. So true.
So here's a scene. This is not my change, but this is a scene they shot but didn't make it into the film. I think this is Drew Pearce talking. One of the reasons we got away with, let's face it, quite a few drug references to Trevor in Iron Man 3 is because that's actually a plot point. At the end, Trevor has stolen one of the Extremis injectors, basically comes out onto the oil rig and says, you tried to lock me in the cupboard, you incandescent knobs, and jabs himself and then promptly blows up. It was quite frankly the most Monty Python of all the beats we had in Iron Man 3, which is why they cut it. But it would have been funny. You can imagine it. But I guess also maybe test screenings were like, don't bump off Trevor Slattery just yet, because he plays quite a prominent role in Shang-Chi as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is he in Shang-Chi?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I've watched that. That's wine for you. That's sidecar for you.
But yeah, I think they mess up a bit of a reveal at the end. I think Killian needs to show everyone that he can breathe fire during the climactic fight, not just before it when he burns some stairs, then forgets to use it again. Like, you don't establish that your villain can breathe fire and then just fuck it.
Good.
And it should happen in front of Tony, so Tony can do a funny one-liner when he sees it.
That's
That's great. And also, do you want to mention the docs?
Well, that is in the fucking
right,
docs.
Exactly, and that ruins it even further, yeah.
Okay.
Great. Well, are you done? You done?
Yeah.
Right! It's time for our first Christmas verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Oh, so Batman Returns versus Iron Man 3, Burton versus Black, Keaton versus Downey Jr., Michelle Pfeiffer versus... I don't know, they all died really, really quickly. So, right, Chris... Let's have you first.
Okay. Iron Man 3 does really interesting things with its hero, stripping him of his suits, never allowing him to be fully powered up throughout the movie, meaning Tony Stark goes on a proper journey to realise that he really is Iron Man, even without the suit, at the end of the story. In Returns, Batman, Bruce Wayne, is pretty much the fourth lead and essentially the pointless love interest, meaning it fails as a Batman movie, which is a solid way of separating these films, I think. So 12-year-old me is going to be shouting at this podcast if he knew what one was. I'm going for Iron Man 3.
One vote for Iron Man 3.
I'm sorry, Batman Returns, I still love you. That's 12-year-old me.
I think I might go next, if that's all right with you, V.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so I like Iron Man 3. I like it. A lot. It is my favourite Iron Man movie, but it is no match for what is still the best Batman movie, Batman Returns. Yes, there is certainly some nostalgia that Chris has ignored creeping into my vote. It was the first Batman movie I saw at the cinema. It's maybe Tim Burton's most Tim Burton movie. Michelle Pfeiffer is still the best Catwoman. Keaton is still the best Batman / Bruce Wayne. Danny DeVito is still the best Penguin. Christopher Walken is just fucking fantastic.
He's still the best Max Shrek.
Messy climax aside, this is a wondrous piece of Christmas cinema and cinema in general. Batman Returns gets my vote. It is one apiece. Vicky, over to you.
Let me just drink it all in.
The power.
Like a big power sidecar.
Yum, 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 yum. This is very hard. As I said, I literally wrote Batman Returns before I'd watched either of them, because as much as I remember enjoying Iron Man 3, it's like, come on. Now then, Catwoman has been with lots of us, but she's been with me my whole life. You can see it so clearly.
She's not been with me. She's been with you.
She's been with Vicky.
She's like that.
There's a video on you porn.
Sorry about that, but yeah, I won. But I forgot Christopher Walken was even in it, if I can be honest.
I think I had.
Yeah, I was like, oh, brilliant, but didn't remember that.
And actually, maybe Max Schreck is the best Max Schreck.
Yeah.
So, now, visionary director Tim Burton. The trouble is, you know what I'm like for script. The script is buckling under the weight of this vision from visionary director Tim Burton, and it annoys me, and there isn't a clean line through it. I know it's easy to say now because we've had Christopher Nolan's version, but you could even do this where it's just Batman and Catwoman. You don't need any of the other stuff.
You've got Bane in that one, though. Christopher Nolan, it's not just Batman and Catwoman.
No, what I'm saying is, I'm saying a villain versus hero, so yeah. As in two people doing the thing. I know that there's other people in and out, but like focus on who is your main villain and just do that rather than she is a little bit and he is a little bit and then Penguin's a little bit, like too much going on.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So anyway, I will say Iron Man 3 is noticeably stronger on the dialogue than the plot. There are some plot holes. Like he kills it, obviously, with the little witty one-liners, but like Tim Burton, maybe the narrative like got a bit forgotten about or whatever. But I am in the mood to just fuck it and we will kill these sacred cows. And I actually think Iron Man 3 is better than Batman Returns.
Boo.
I said it. So there we go.
Boo.
I know, it feels weird.
Yeah, I bet it does.
It does.
That's going to come back to haunt you this fucking Christmas.
Okay.
Even for me, that Sorry. Was more threatening than needed. Hey, we have a winner. Let's celebrate instead of me making vague threats.
Quite precise, actually.
Yeah, very, very precise.
With a clock on it.
Very precise. Yeah, it's like
I'm going to come and get you.
I'm going to come over in the Catwoman outfit and go, yeah, this is a different Catwoman to last time. Right, we have a winner. The winner is Iron Man 3. You never saw it coming. Don't forget, though, you can have your say and tell us how right or wrong you think we got it when the listener poll goes up on Twitter. That's it. We are done. Let's look ahead to next week. Vicky, the clue you gave on Monday was...
Bad Santa.
I like it. I had Santa Claus's gunning to town, but...
Oh, that's really good.
Oh, thanks.
I really like that.
Thanks. I liked yours. I like yours.
Oh, thank you.
Right then, next week... What are we doing, V?
We're doing Fat Man versus Violent Night. They're both widely available. I didn't list them.
Yeah, that's fine.
They're just are.
If they're widely available,
they
fine.
Yeah.
So that is Fat Man versus Violent Night. That's next week's Merry Clashmas Christmas Countdown. Part duh. In the meantime, between now and then, don't forget to do your homework. Please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, where we are at Clash Pod. Back on Monday, talking Fat Man. Until then, have a lovely weekend. Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.